I was definitely that person, Anna, that couldn't, I could not switch off. And I think you know you're also heading for burnout when you're in that point where you just cannot switch off.
That's Helena Field, founder of Action Wellbeing, and her mission is to teach others how to be well at work. My name is Anna McDonald, and as an assistant and recovering people pleaser, I have a long history of putting my own well-being behind others' needs. It can be so hard to say no, to take time off, to identify what you actually need in order to feel well and then take action. In this episode, I ask Helena how to do just that. Hello and welcome to the Ambitious Admin Podcast. I'm your host, Anna McDonald, CEO and founder of The Ambitious Admin. I help new corporate assistants hit the ground running by taking a proactive approach to their skill development and building the confidence to bring their whole, authentic, dynamic, powerful selves to work. The goal of this podcast is to give you the support and guidance that is so often missing for the role of administrative professional, and provide a space where you can feel heard, understood, and appreciated. Now, let's get to the new episode. Are you a new assistant who wants to hit the ground running and get a firm handle of the what, why, and how of your role? Snag my free course on how to be a good assistant and shine in your first 90 days. This free course covers what questions to ask in your first 90 days, what routines to establish, how to get organized with Microsoft OneNote, the top hard skills to develop, and the top soft skills to develop, as well as things I wish I knew when I started as an assistant. And it includes bonus materials, including a customizable executive support summary, a recommended book list, and a morning mindset worksheet. Head on over to theambitiousadmin.com to enroll for free. Welcome, Helena. It's so good to have you here. So, of course, we know that you are passionate about the topic of taking self-care seriously, but I want to take a moment to chat about your background and why you founded Action Wellbeing and why you're so passionate about this topic.
Oh, thank you, Anna. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. Oh, gosh. So, my story in a nutshell. I have worked in wellbeing for 21 years. I started running gyms. I was a personal trainer and then I ran gyms and then I ran spas for many, many years. So beautiful, prestigious spas in the UK. And I was looking after people's wellbeing, of course, by doing so. But that meant, unfortunately, that I was working really long hours. I was working sort of getting into work at sort of 8 in the morning, finishing at 8, 9 at night. And as glamorous as it sounds, running a beautiful spa with lots of lovely treatments, it's challenging. It's really quite hard work. You're looking after customers, you're looking after staff, you're running around all the time. You've got to really, really have a lot of stamina. You've got to be able to look after, you know, the fact that I could have a therapist one day in tears on me and a guest the next minute shouting at me. So you get everything thrown at you. And I was running teams of sort of 100 people, big operations as well. One of my spas I ran was 45,000 square foot, huge spa with an outdoor
pool. Wow.
Yeah, like big spas. And it was all wonderful and I absolutely loved it. But what I didn't realize was that the more I was throwing myself into my job over the years, the more I wasn't looking after myself at all, really. But eventually in 2016, I hit burnout. And that, I mean, that was complete and utter shock to me that I'd got to that point, that I'd let my body and my mind just completely deteriorate to the point where I ended up with suffering from anxieties and I was low. I was having panic attacks. I had lethargy all the time and I had to change up my whole lifestyle. So I had to leave my job. I had to rethink everything. But being the person I am, being very conscientious, I still kept working, thinking I could just work through this and find some solutions whilst I was still working. So I kept working. And what I didn't realise is I was just pushing myself even further and further into that into that position of burnout, and until I eventually, you know, I did hit a wall. And I've spent the past, where are we now, sort of 2 or 3 years trying to build myself back up and trying to heal from the damage I'd done. However, that has been an incredible and, you know, really sort of inspiring journey, I suppose. I inspire myself really where I've come, you know, in that time. Because I've had to work really, really hard to find all the solutions to sort of look after my health and well-being and truly understand what it means to look after yourself and why it's so important to look after yourself. And now I'm back to me, the person that I was. I'm bouncy and bubbly and sparkly. My friends used to call me Tigger. Family used to call me Tigger. So like I'm back to that, but I'd lost that for a long time. Like I'd lost that bounciness. So it's nice. It's really nice to be back there, but it's been a journey. And so now what has come out of that, which I wasn't expecting, is that I now help others. And I set up Action Wellbeing to help others to not get to the point I got to, you know? I mean, yes, I've been helping people as well with burnout, but actually my ideal situation is to help others get, you know, get the help earlier or recognize the signs earlier so that they don't get to the point I did and have to recover the way I had to recover. So Action Wellbeing is a passion project. It's completely me trying to help others and educate others into what wellbeing is. For me, that's being happy, healthy, and comfortable. It's the dictionary definition, but it makes total sense to me. And so, yeah, I work with people, I coach them, and I also consult with companies and help them understand how to weave well-being into their company culture. So that's where it's all led me.
And you bring up a really good point when you talked about how you lost part of yourself, because I think that, you know, you're going about your life and you're just thinking you're stressed and you're tired and all of those things, but it really does chip away at your joy. And I can absolutely relate to that, where you just don't even feel like yourself anymore. And you don't even remember what it was like to feel that way or act that way or be that way. And so you talked about the definition of well-being a little bit. What does workplace well-being look like? Like in an ideal world, what does that look like in the workplace?
Yeah, I mean, so I try and go at it at a slightly different angle to others. So for me, a company should be people-centric anyway, that, you know, the people are everything. If they're not focused on their people, then they're not going to make the profits. You know, so putting profit before people just doesn't make sense to me. So a company culture, for me, that really puts people first, and you put people first by looking after their well-being. And by that, I mean that you're giving them the environment that's right for their well-being. You're giving them tools. You're giving them education. You're giving them opportunity to look after their well-being. So that, for me, is a company that's doing it right. But the angle I come at is slightly different, because I try and get to the individual. Because I believe that the company can only do so much, and you've got to do things for yourself. You cannot expect your company just to suddenly, you know, hand you everything on a plate to say, this is how you look after yourself. They can't, you know, they're busy themselves. So they can give you certain aspects. I always think that companies can do quite a lot. And maybe, you know, that's something that different companies can do in different ways. It depends on the setup. It depends on the environment, of course. But Even if it's a small office with a small number of people, you know, what's to say they can't have healthy snacks available? What's to say they can't help you manage breaks better? You know, getting fresh air, getting daylight, things like that. Simple things, just encouragement and empowerment to do the right things by your body and your mind. But I honestly believe that we as individuals should be doing a lot more for ourselves to make sure we're looking after ourselves, and then we're able to then go and present ourselves in our workplace in a really good, healthy way. So by that, I mean that we need to take care of ourselves. And this is the self-care element that we've talked about, Anna. It's that, you know, it's you having self-compassion for yourself and doing the right things by your physical and mental health. So you taking ownership is really, really important.
Right, because they can encourage us to take the breaks, but they can't take the break for us,
right?
Exactly. So we have to actually take advantage of that. Now, also you mentioned realizing that you were burnt out kind of when it was too late. You were already burnt out. You were already stressed. So identifying the symptoms of burnout seems to be very important so that you can get there before it's too late, before you've already started having those anxiety feelings and lethargy and those things. So what are some of the first signs that someone is on that track to feeling burnt out, to being burnt out? What are some of the things that we can identify ahead of time to prevent ourselves from getting there?
It's really interesting because I think, you know, obviously in hindsight, I can look back now and remember how I felt, things I was ignoring. I was getting physical symptoms. So for example, I was getting colds regularly. I was getting very, very tired. I'd want to go to bed quite early. I was just so shattered, but I just assumed that's normal, of course. But actually, really, it wasn't normal that I was so tired. Sort of lack of concentration at work. I think you start to know that you're not on it. You're just not on it. You're not focused. You're overwhelmed. Little things are irritating you. People are irritating you. Things that are being said are irritating you. Things that you might otherwise have normally let go over your head, you're reacting to. And it's all that mindset that it's becoming too much. It's becoming physically and mentally too much. And I think what we do is we just, you know, this stress label that we use all the time now, it's like a badge of honor, you know. But of course I'm stressed because I'm, you know, I'm working long hours. And I'm working long hours because, you know, again, that's a badge of honor. You know, I work long hours. It's important to me. I work long hours. It's, you know, I have to be conscientious. So I work long hours. You know, the things we say to ourselves and tell ourselves, that's okay. And I find it really fascinating because that's exactly what I did. And I wore my overworking, as I said, as a badge of honor. I believe that by telling everyone that I was this conscientious, hard worker doing 12, 13 hour days, giving my job my all, you know, was somehow going to win me an award. I don't know, but.
I totally get it. And I hear it a lot from assistants, you know, and not to take away from the fact that we are very busy and we could work, you know, 4 days straight probably, but that's not the ultimate success. That's not the ultimate goal. There's actually much more courage in taking a break and protecting your well-being, right?
Absolutely.
And another product of burnout that I see a lot in the workplace is employees becoming resentful. Mm-hmm. Even if all of these things are offered to them and they're told to take breaks and have vacation time and sick time, they tend to put this pressure on themselves, or even if it's an external pressure from coworkers, and it creates this resentment where now they dread coming into work. Anytime they're asked to do something, they have that sort of visceral reaction. They're annoyed and they're resentful of their job. Mm-hmm. But in reality, if they are taking their well-being seriously, it sounds like you could prevent that feeling as well.
Well, that's right, Anna. I think the thing is we believe that somehow it's the company's fault. You know, as you said, you become resentful of your job, of the company, when actually, have you stood back and worked out why you're in this position? You know, what are you missing? What are you ignoring in terms of your daily routine, in terms of how your habits are healthy? Do you have healthy habits? Do you have poor habits? You know, what's your mindset like? Do you care for yourself enough to give yourself time out? Do you give yourself digital detox? You know, we don't question things. We get to the point, and I did. I got to the point where I was resentful of my job and the company. And I look back now and actually, you know, there's more they could have done, of course. There's more they could have done to support me. But did I ask them to? You know, did I ask them to help me? So my view is that we can take a lot more responsibility ourselves. And if we step back and we push back, you know, and we have enough self-respect for ourselves to say, actually, do you know what? I'm somebody who really needs sleep. Am I giving myself enough sleep? you know what, I'm not giving myself enough sleep, so I really need to focus on that. And my goodness, for me, for example, sleep's a massive thing. Sleep is something that if I don't get full sleep, I'm not functioning properly, you know.
Yes, same here.
You know, and I think most of us are like that. So it's not usually complicated things that need to change to really make a huge amendment to our mindset and to our energy and to our physical and mental health at work and ultimately our well-being. So for me, if you're getting to the point where you're resentful, can you step back and really look at your routine? Do you have a routine? You know, do you have a healthy routine throughout the day? Do you have a good morning start to the morning? Do you plan your time well? You know, do you plan at all? You know, all these things factor into the fact that ultimately, the more that you keep pushing yourself without any structure, routine, boundaries, you know, are you saying no to things that don't serve you? Are you letting things pile up and just ignoring them? And there's all these different factors that play into it. So the way I look at it, sort of, it's important to sort of step back. Let's take it, break it down. Look at your week at work, and then what can you do, A, within your week at work, but B, what can you do within your home life to really, really complement your work day? So, for example, as I mentioned sleep already, you know, if you're not getting enough sleep and you're going to work feeling tired the next day and had a huge impact on your work, and of course, then that becomes that thing that ends up breaking you at work because you're tired all the time, you're not being productive, your boss is probably frustrated with you, your colleagues are getting angry with you, know, and it's that. But all it ultimately boiled down to was lack of sleep. So it's
right.
Yeah, it's just breaking it down. And as simple as it sounds, I think we don't do that. We get so overwhelmed by the fact that we're feeling tired, we're feeling low, lack of concentration, anxiety, stress, that we can't see the wood through the trees. And so, you know, it really is a case of stepping right back. Sometimes you need someone else to look in as well and maybe make suggestions because you can't see it. But little tweaks to your life, little tweaks to your routine can make such a difference. And that's how I've recovered. You know, I'm talking from experience because this is how I've changed my life and got back to me again.
Right. Right. And you mentioned sleep, and I want to touch on a couple other practical ways that people can increase their well-being. Another one that you mentioned was a digital detox. Mm. And I really like the sound of that, especially in the world that we're in right now, where every meeting is a Zoom meeting or some sort of digital meeting. Everything we're doing is digital. So could you elaborate a little bit more on that and maybe any other practical solutions that people could implement?
Yeah, I mean, digital's, it's got out of control, hasn't it? In the past 30 years since really the internet, it's got completely out of control. We now have 24-hour news. We have any number of social media channels. We're on every single app we can think of. We've got a mobile. We've probably got several mobiles. We've got a phone. And it comes in at every angle. And that is so overwhelming. And I think we don't realize just how much that is impacting us. We probably don't realize that the average we spend on digital devices is sort of nearly 7 hours now a day. And I mean, it's crazy, right? And put it in perspective, our ancestors, obviously, who didn't have that, they did much more agricultural jobs and they would be out moving around all day long, working, you know, 12, 13 hour days outside, moving, not sitting. We now only move for, you know, a few hours a day. We're really sitting. So from that point of view, not only is digital affecting us because it's that constant noise, but it's also meaning we're not moving, we're not getting movement as well. So there's two things that tie into it for me. So when I talk about digital detox, it's really about putting boundaries on our digital devices. So taking times when you don't have digital. So I take a Sunday. My friends know that if I'm not online on a Sunday, it's because I've left my phone, I've turned it off. You know, and I also don't pick up my phone until after 8 o'clock in the morning. That's become a really strong practice for me. So 8 o'clock's my like first time I can pick that phone up. And at night, I don't go to bed with it. It stays in another room because that was becoming such a bad habit for me that I was every night lying in bed just constantly scrolling. you know, this scrolling habit thing. It was just, you know, absolutely pointless. And I never got anything from it other than the fact that I was sitting there scrolling and then not feeling sleepy. And so it's shaking up that habit. But the other thing with digital detox is then getting outside, ideally, but at least getting movement in whatever shape that needs to be. So when you're not on digital devices, you know, you should be walking, but you should be, you know, out in nature, sitting out in nature, find a bench, you know, sit on the grass outside, whatever it is you need to do that's completely getting you away from these devices. You know, even if it's curled up under a blanket, but it's something you're doing that's not sitting, being consumed by all this data and noise. And we just don't do it enough. We don't take that time for ourselves and we don't realize how much it's impacting us. So I'm a big believer in having those breaks. And as I said, getting out in nature is one of the most powerful things you can do as well. And one of my big mistakes I made when I was working in spas was that I was always indoors. I would, you know, particularly when I worked in London, I ran a big spa in London and it was underground. And I would go in the morning, 8 o'clock in, the, you know, in the dark, and I'd come out at night in the dark.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Yeah. So crazy. And I wasn't getting out and getting daylight and getting fresh air. And I realized how detrimental that was to me. I was moving around within the building, but I wasn't getting outside. So, you know, I would say to anyone, take as many fresh air breaks as you can, you know, get those legs moving. And if that's your opportunity to have a digital break, use that as your opportunity, you know. So yeah, they're really key things for me.
Yeah, I love that. And I find that especially even if I'm in like a panic mode and I'm like in the thick of it, the best thing I can do over and above completing the task is to get up, walk away, walk outside, go get, you know, a cup of coffee and then come back to it. And it's not that it's not still urgent, but my mind space and my mindset is just completely different. You know, it's just much more refreshed and I can think more clearly than when I'm in the thick of that panic and urgency and stress, right? Also, you mentioned just being in quiet, like even sitting outside. Mm. It's so hard to do, but you can train yourself to do it. I mean, I know myself, I'll sit there for like 30 seconds and be like, well, it's had to be like 15 minutes by now, you know? And then all of a sudden you look at your watch and you're like, no, it's been a minute, Anna. And it's just because you're so used to that constant barrage of sounds and sights and notifications. But it is possible to get to that point where that's actually not just possible, but it's relaxing and beneficial.
It's truly quite healing, actually. I was definitely that person, Anna, that could not switch off. And I think, you know, you're also heading for burnout when you're in that point where you just cannot switch off. And so techniques for that, for example, is one of the things I think is really important is you do write down things. You know, that's partly really, really vital for your well-being, because if you keep it all stored up in your head, then you're never going to switch that brain off, are you? So one thing I always say to people is just write everything down, have lists, work from lists, brain dump, and then clear that head of those things that, you know, so that it's down. You don't have to hold it in your head. It's there ready for you. And then, as you said, go outside, sit down and just have some quiet, just look at your surroundings, just, you know, if that's not going to work for you, that complete quiet isn't for you, put a podcast on, put some music on, but do something that's different to work, do something that's different to maybe the other things that are influencing you. So say you're a mom, you're a busy mom, and you've got kids noise constantly around you. My goodness, go and take that time when you need it. Because you've just got to quiet that brain down. Even if it's, as I said, with music and a podcast, it's doing something that's different. It's hearing a different sound, but you're in your own zone and it's completely for you. And I go back to that self-care, self-compassion. This is you doing what's right for you. I think it's so, so vital. And I think so often, you know, many of us are people pleasers. Many of us are the people that do everything for everyone else.
Yeah.
You relate to that, right? You know, and then you realize that actually by doing that, you're wearing yourself out. So you can't give enough to those people. Actually, you can give more if you rest, right? You can give more to your family, you can give more to your friends, you can give more to your colleagues if you've rested, and give more to your job, give more to your work. We're only actually productive 4 hours a day on average, and yet we throw all these hours in, but the productive hours are only about four a day. So imagine if you're rested and you've, you know, used those, the rest of your hours in a really productive way to you know, get exercise, get decent food, get fresh air, all the other things, so that those 4 hours really are truly productive. And actually, you may even have more productive hours if you're rested and everything else.
Right. While you were talking, I was thinking, you know, when I'm starting to feel burnt out, especially I have three daughters, two of whom are toddlers. And I know that when I'm stressed out and I've had a really hard work day, the thought of them coming home from daycare stresses me out, because I know it's like job number two starting and it's stressful. But let's say I took a weekend away and was rested and had that space for myself, I'm excited to see my kids. You know, and so that may be a more extreme example, but when you are rested and you've taken the time for yourself, that time with your family and your loved ones is exciting and happy, and it doesn't feel like just another job, you know? So I noticed that for myself big time, especially with little kids. Now, as assistants, we have a unique vantage point with many times executives who are running the company, who are making the decisions about well-being programs and ways to take care of their people over and above their profit, like you mentioned before. Are there certain ways that we could approach management of a company or of a department in a company where maybe workplace well-being is not necessarily at the top of the list? And what are some easy ways that a company can implement that we could suggest that would bring workplace well-being to more of a forefront?
Yeah, I think a lot of companies, they probably want to do it. They want to look at it. They know it's out there. They know they've got to be paying attention, particularly since the pandemic. I think that's had a huge impact on companies' opinions of workplace well-being programs. So there's an intention there from a lot of companies, but the big issue is often time. So I would be saying to companies who are struggling with that, who think, oh my goodness, how do I possibly fulfill a well-being criteria for our company? You know, maybe we start small. Maybe we do little things that we can do within the structure of the business already that doesn't take up much time. So, for example, having a notice board, a simple thing, but having a notice board with lots of information that's updated regularly on things that are going on, or health and well-being information. There's so much out there. You know, you could have somebody that's representative in the company that looks after it. You know, simple. It could be that you create a really lovely space for everyone to go and relax, you know, find an old, I don't know, cupboard and, you know, turn it into a nice lounge area, whatever it is, you know, making the best of your workplace environment so that there's somewhere people can actually go and sit and be quiet. You know, having healthy refreshments available is ideal. You know, really having vending machines with lots of chocolate bars and fizzy drinks is not helpful. You know, however much we all love it, it's not actually helping, you know, so it's a case of just some little tweaks that you could do. But I would be demonstrating to my managers who are maybe struggling with this, who don't see the benefit of giving workplace wellbeing programs their time, I'd be demonstrating to them the impact it could have. You know, it's all very well, but if your absenteeism figures are so high, and you know what's going on, you know, demonstrate that, show them what's happening. We you know, we're spending this much on recruitment because we keep losing people. Why are we losing people? You know, is there a problem there, and is it something that can be looked at? So, you know, managers want to see figures. They want to see where the problems are, and they want to see where the problems how the problems can be fixed. And of course, a lot of it's numbers. So demonstrate to them that actually, you know what, if we had a really well workforce, then we could be a lot more productive and ultimately make more profit for the company. You know, that can be demonstrated. There's so much out there now. There's so much information out there to demonstrate that. And actually, if everyone's behind this, and everyone gets on board, and as I've sort of said before, looks after their own well-being and has the tools available from the workplace, has the time available from the workplace, but more than anything, the culture of their workplace encourages that, then actually the bosses don't need to do much at all. It's just that you know, that the individual's going to do it, you know. So it's not actually something that they're going to have to roll up their sleeves and do. But they, if they're supporting it, that's the starting point. So I just hope that's the way it will go.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually was recently reading a study about millennials in the workplace, and it said that 70% of millennials would take a lower paying job if it meant being more engaged and happier at work. And I found that interesting because part of my journey was offering to take less money. I actually told HR, I will take up to $10,000 a year less to get this position I was posting for, because I was missing the work-life balance, the happiness at work. I was tired all the time. I felt challenged and bored at the same time. And there was no way out of it. There was nobody that cared, quite frankly. It was just the culture there. And I offered to take less money just to get out of it. And I was surprised to read that study, because that tells me that that's actually not uncommon. And that's how important well-being in the workplace is. And that's how badly the next generation in the workforce wants to feel joyful and well and fulfilled at work.
Isn't it a case
that go ahead.
They're probably seeing their parent are the ones that have burnt out. You know, they're probably witnessing this firsthand and wondering why their parents are working these ridiculous hours, stressed, coming home. You know, it's probably impacted their own lives, their own childhood. So maybe that generation is the generation that's going to change this, because they're seeing it for themselves. They're witnessing this world as it's changing. And one of the things I'm hearing as well, Anna, is that a lot of these young people don't even want to be on social media. There's a whole new movement not to be on Facebook and stuff. So, you know, are they the generation that are actually seeing the benefit of being, you know, out in nature? Again, going back to kind of where I was as a child, you know, we didn't have digital devices in the 80s.
Right.
It was great. It was really great childhood. You know, I was outside all the time climbing trees and stuff. So, you know, maybe this generation coming round is going to change some of this. And I hope so, because, you know, this badge of honor thing that I mentioned is happening too much. People, you know, going in on a Saturday morning just to show their bosses that they're keen. You know, I know in America you work all these crazy long days, right?
But it's a game. You make a great point that it's this game that we play, and you don't have to play it.
Yes,
you don't have to be in that cycle, in that rat race. And you also brought up a good point that it, and this never really even occurred to me until you said it, about watching our parents go through years, you know, many decades, even at the same company where they've worked these crazy hours and worked and worked and worked, and they're working for retirement, which of course financially that makes total sense. But it brought back to me, and I don't mean to like bring the whole mood down, but it's something I'm really passionate about. So my mom passed away when she was 60 years old, and she was 1 year away from retirement, and she and my dad had worked their whole lives for retirement. I mean, everything of that generation is, you know, you work for 40, 50 years and then you can retire and then you get to do what you want to do. And my mom loved life. I mean, she loved to travel. She loved to have experiences. And she passed away 1 year before retirement. And I know then subsequently my decision to offer to take less money for a job I would be happier in was a result of knowing that life can change at any moment, and I'm not going to wait until I'm 60 years old to have a good work-life balance. I mean, that's just ludicrous to even think of.
It's mad, isn't it? And you know, You know, Anna, honestly, that's story, and I'm so sorry to hear that that's your story. But unfortunately, that's too common. And I've had a similar story in my life. My uncle, we lost him at 57 suddenly, and he just sold his company. And he was about to live his life, you know, and live his dreams. So, yeah, I mean, wow, isn't that like powerful for both of us to learn that? Unfortunately, right. In the saddest way. I mean, that's why I've changed a lot of the ways I live, because I realize there's much more to life, and I want to live it, and I want to see my family, and I want to enjoy my days. And ultimately, it's about happiness, right?
I think sometimes when you hear that, you know, it's about being happy right now, people think that means, okay, well, let me sell everything and move to the Caribbean. And that seems too much of a big change. So they just don't make any change at all. But I think based on what we've talked about today, it can be these small routines and habits that you built into your life that you have now that can contribute to that fulfillment and happiness and workplace well-being. It doesn't have to be these drastic changes to your entire life, but it's just being aware of the harm that can happen with burnout and stress and anxiety, and that it's worth it to address it head on before it gets to that point, right?
And so right what you just said. I think people just think it has to ultimately be these big holidays that give us the time off. You know, you save yourself up. Oh, I'll keep working. I'll keep focusing. I'll keep working really, really hard because I've got, you know, a holiday coming up. No, this should be every single day. This shouldn't be, the time out shouldn't just be that one big holiday. So the time out needs to be having a really relaxing, restful, gentle morning routine, getting yourself into your work day nice and gently, in throughout your work day, taking breaks, doing exercise, eating well. It's not rocket science, but entwining that, weaving it into that work day, getting home. Yes, you might have a family you're suddenly looking after, and you know you're going to be still on it. But then when you can, you switch off, you turn that digital device off, you go and get some rest, you put some candles on, you curl up under a blanket, calm your mind and get a really good night's sleep. You know, it's those little things that if you neglect will build up. But treat it as a really indulgent self-care thing that's like a holiday, but you're doing it all the time, you know.
It's just a little cheaper. And COVID friendly,
and
right?
COVID friendly, and COVID friendly.
Yes. Well, Helena, it was so nice to chat about this with you. Your passion on this topic comes through, and I like you, I just think it's so important to talk about and learn about and drum up awareness of how important it is to have that balance and to incorporate well-being into your work life. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, and I look forward to learning more and more from you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Anna. Honestly, I mean, you can tell I'm passionate about it. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity to talk about it. And I would just like to say, just to anyone listening, the big thing for me is just listening to yourself. You know, you've got to listen to your body. You've got to listen to your mind. You can't just ignore things that your body and mind are telling you. It talks to you, you know, it tells you when it needs things. It tells you what it needs, you know. So just listen. And I think that's honestly, of all the things I've learned, that's been the thing that I've taken from this journey I've been on the most. So if I'm tired, I go sleep. If I've been eating badly and I know that my body's going oi, I go and eat well. So yeah, there's lots of little things you can do. But thank you so, so much for giving me this opportunity to talk today and share with your followers. So thank you.
One episode is only enough to barely scratch the surface on this topic and the power of feeling well at work. You've heard what an amazing resource Helena is, so I encourage you to go find her on Instagram. Her handle is @actionwellbeing. On the next episode, we'll continue to focus on our well-being. I'll be joined by psychologist Vasia Sarantopoulo, who is an expert on perfectionism, something I know many of us can relate to. I know you have many, many options out there and only a finite amount of time, so thank you so much for listening to this episode. Until next time, be brave, be kind, be you. This is Anna McDonald, and I'll see you then.